Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A handful of states, including New Hampshire, have approved work requirements for some Medicaid recipients. The changes don't affect health coverage for people in the traditional Medicaid population, meaning someone who's low income and can't work for health or family reasons. Instead, the requirements apply just to the newer Medicaid expansion population, numbering about 50,000 adults in New Hampshire. The previous state legislature approved continuing coverage to this group, but only if certain recipients agreed to engage in activities such as a job or school or community service. Now, though, the compromise worked out last year may be in doubt. And today in The Exchange, we find out why and what happens next. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Now, we have three New Hampshire guests for the hour, but we're going to begin with a national look and go to Maddie Quinn. She's Health and Human Services reporter for Governing Magazine. That's a national publication about state and local government. And Maddie Quinn, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So what is a work requirement, Maddie?
Yeah. So a work requirement is this general philosophy from some people who think that if you're covered by Medicaid expansion, but if you're not working and you're not a student, a primary caregiver to somebody, or you can't work because of a disability, then you need to be involved in some form of quote-unquote work in order to continue receiving your health insurance under Medicaid. And that can include work in the most traditional sense, but it can also mean things like volunteering in the community or being a part of a job training program. But just essentially, you know, proving to the government that you're doing something to better yourself. And these programs can also include things like a small premium that you have to pay, or lockout periods that will kick you off for a couple months if you didn't pay your premium, or if you've been on Medicaid for a certain number of years. But basically, there are strings attached to your health insurance.
So, yeah, that's an important point. So work requirement is kind of shorthand, but as Governor Sununu told NHPR recently, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody on Medicaid needs to go out right now and get a full-time job. Let's hear.
It just means able-bodied working adults have to work, do 100 hours. That could be volunteering. It could be community service. It could be, you know, getting a part-time job or a full-time job. It could be going to school, right? There's a whole variety of ways that just for the able-bodied working adult population, we're giving, kind of encouraging them and incentivizing them with that dignity of work. I mean, it's all about getting them back into, you know, into a system to get them back into the workplace.
Again, that's Governor Chris Sununu in an interview earlier with NHPR. And if we could, Maddie, just remind everybody which population this applies to and which it does not. People who receive Medicaid health coverage under Medicaid expansion from the Affordable Care Act, not the population that's covered under what's called traditional Medicaid. Can you just explain that to us and why it's important?
Right. So generally speaking, I mean, nothing regarding Medicaid is straightforward,
right?
Especially when you're looking at multiple states. But generally speaking, these are people who make in between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty line. So to put that in, you know, layman's terms, if you're making 138% of the federal poverty line for a single person, that equals about $16,000 a year. So, you know, falling in that 100 and 138% of the federal poverty line, and you don't qualify for an exemption like disability, being a student, caregiver, things like that.
So when people say able-bodied, as the governor did, and as a lot of people do in this conversation, who decides who is able-bodied?
Right. I think, again, it kind of goes back to, you know, whether or not you can prove whether you can have a job. So having some kind of disability.
How many states, Maddie, at this point have work requirements on the books?
Right. So Arkansas was the first to implement last year, and technically they are still the only state that is actively reviewing compliance and kicking people off. And the latest numbers there are around 18,000 people have lost their insurance as a result. Indiana's went into effect last month, but I almost don't want to count them just yet because people don't have to start reporting their hours until July, and people won't start getting kicked off for noncompliance until January 2020. So New Hampshire is really the next state to watch in terms of how things play out. Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Kentucky have all been cleared by the federal government to start implementing, you know, their vision of work requirements. But I would also say that's still very much a moving target. You know, Michigan and Wisconsin's governors, you know, they elected Democrats in November, and they're kind of fighting to soften them and roll them back. Arizona's will start in 2020, and then Kentucky's are currently tied up in the courts. So between ongoing litigation and the changing of hands of political parties, it's still, you know, changing by the day, I would say.
Wow.
And then there are also eight other states that are waiting to hear back from the federal government if they can implement.
Interesting. So lots really up in the air. You can't really say clearly, Maddie, X number of states have work requirements. It seems like there's a lot of churn when it comes to this field.
Yes.
I mean, I'm interested in Arkansas. You said 18,000 people lost their Medicaid coverage under Arkansas's work requirement. From what I understand, Maddie, and please correct me if I'm wrong, now that program has been kind of put on hold, right?
It's not put on hold, but there was, from my understanding, there was a kind of a nonpartisan committee that kind of looked at how it's played out and has asked the governor to put the program on hold because, you know, it hasn't been working as intended and too many people have gotten kicked off. And there's data to prove that people who qualify for exemptions have gotten swept up in it. But last I heard, the National Governors Association, they met this past weekend and the governor of Arkansas is standing by the program. But there is, you know, on the national stage, people, you know, kind of pleading with him to put it on hold because the data isn't very favorable, I guess is the most polite way to put it.
I see. So in these states that you've been looking at, Maddie, it sounds like there's about half a dozen that have been debating these and working through the process. What's been the argument in favor of these work requirements?
Right. So some people believe that the Medicaid expansion option is very generous and that if people want to benefit from that government generosity, they need to show that they're bettering themselves and they're not just relying on government indefinitely. So by the people who do support them, they're seen as a step stool out of poverty.
As we heard in that clip from Governor Sununu, and what's been the argument against them?
Right. So there's the argument, like I mentioned, with kind of what we're seeing in Arkansas, which is that it doesn't really work as intended. You know, people who qualify for Medicaid expansion are still living on the margins of society. They often don't have a fixed address, reliable internet access. They're more likely to pay by the minute on a cell phone plan. And so putting up these sort of administrative barriers that require them to call a number or show up to an office or log onto a website is just sort of setting them up to get kicked off. And many of them work, you know, service jobs or gig economy jobs where their hours change week to week and it's harder to show that they're meeting that, you know, hour a month threshold. And like I said earlier, you know, there's data from Arkansas's experiment that shows that people who qualify for an exemption are still getting swept up in this just because of the different administrative hoops that they've had to jump through.
So just basic access to technology, people who receive Medicaid coverage often don't have access to computers or the internet or email.
Right, right. And I do know Arkansas, and I know New Hampshire is trying to avoid this, but Arkansas also did not do a good job of communication. And so most people just straight up just did not know that there was a new work requirement they had to comply with.
Well, okay. And in a few minutes, again, I'll bring in our New Hampshire guests and they can give us an update on what's been happening here in the Granite State. But just a quick question about New Hampshire for you, Maddie. How does our work requirement stack up against the couple others that you've been looking at?
Right. So my understanding is that New Hampshire's is more demanding. 100 hours a month is the most of any of the states that have been approved by the federal government. There's also a shorter grace period. You know, Arkansas had a full 3 months before people had to start complying. And New Hampshire's, I know, is only 75 days or so. And I do know that, you know, I know things are changing daily in Concord, but the last I reported was that New Hampshire is also not exempting people 50 years and up, which Arkansas, they do exempt people 50 years and up. So there's that piece of it as well.
Yeah, and there's a bill in the legislature that actually would include that 50 years and up. Last question for you, Maddie, and then we'll let you go. What do you think is going to happen next in terms of these other states that you've been looking at on the work requirements? You know, Kentucky, Arkansas,
right.
You mentioned a couple others.
Yeah, so honestly, you know, no pressure, but I do think all eyes right now are on New Hampshire and Indiana. Arkansas's experiment has been, you know, a big lesson, I think, in what not to do. So depending on what happens in New Hampshire and Indiana, I think is really going to shape the conversation moving forward.
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much, Maddie. Really interesting.
Thank you so much.
That's Maddie Quinn, Health and Human Services reporter for Governing Magazine, a national publication about state and local government. Again, today in the Exchange, we're looking at the Medicaid work requirement. And as we just heard, New Hampshire is one of a few states experimenting with this idea of requiring some Medicaid recipients, to engage in certain activities, school, volunteering, a job. The program passed last year under the previous legislature. Now there are a couple bills in the current legislature that make changes. We're going to hear about those and just talk about this broader philosophical issue and some of the examples in other states that Maddie told us about. As always, we want to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Well, with us for the full hour is Jeb Bradley. He's on the phone. He's a Republican state senator from Wolfboro. He serves on the Health and Human Services Committee. And Senator Bradley, always good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
Good, thank you. And also with us, Dan Feltes, Democratic state senator from Concord and the Senate Majority Leader. And Senator Feltes, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
It's good to see you, too, Laura. Thank you.
And also with us, Jason Moon, our own health reporter here at NHPR. And Jason, thank you for helping us out.
You bet.
Well, and Jason, I want to turn to you first. So just remind us, sort of press rewind, if you could, please. What were the politics around New Hampshire approving this work requirement in the last legislature?
Yeah, that's actually becoming a harder question to answer because the politics around that have become a point of debate in the current legislature. I think it's safe to say, however, that Medicaid expansion would not have been reauthorized under a Republican-controlled legislature, which the last session, just to remind people, was Republican control of both houses, Republican governor, that Medicaid expansion would not have been reauthorized without a work requirement. I think
so
it's
Republicans
safe to
said
say.
We will not reauthorize this program extending health coverage to about 50,000 grantstaters unless this is in there. This makes us feel better about it.
I think it's safe to say it was a key part of the compromise with Democrats to reauthorize it. If you look around the country, other states under Republican control have chosen not to partake in the Medicaid expansion at all. So if it was going to happen under Republican control, the work requirement was a key part of making that happen. The reason I say it's that is somewhat a point of debate now is because now that Democrats are in control, there are some efforts to tweak or do away with the work requirement altogether, and Republicans are saying that that is a violation of that bipartisan agreement we reached last session. So I'm sure both senators will have a lot to say about that, but that's sort of to set the stage for where we are today.
Well, I know both senators want to jump in, but just another question or two for you too, Jason, please. We heard that clip from Governor Sununu about the specifics of the work requirement, you know, clarifying that it doesn't mean you immediately have to go out and get a full-time job. So what is in our work requirement?
Yeah, it can be a lot of things. It's technically called a community engagement requirement. So it includes having a job, but it can also be going to school, looking for a job, volunteer service, serving as a caregiver for children under certain ages, serving as a caregiver for someone with a disability. If you are going through substance abuse treatment, all these things can count towards your hours. There's a lot of nuance and detail to how much each of these things do. So, for just grabbing one example quickly, if you're a student, your credit hours count toward the work requirement. Now, some people would say if you're a full-time student, 16 hours credit, being a student requires more than the actual 16
sure,
credit hours.
Sure, you just don't go to class for 16
hours.
So
there
hours
are some
yeah.
areas of, you know, you can debate sort of each of these in turn, but there's a lot of different ways that you can accrue hours towards the 100-hour monthly requirement, and you can use any combination of them.
So, Senator Feltes, as Jason alluded, Democrats are looking at changing some from the bill last year. What do you think should change about this work requirement for Medicaid expansion?
Well, first of all, overall, if you want to incentivize work, if you want to reduce barriers to work for people who need it and skill them up, that's one thing. On the other end of the spectrum is the approach taken largely by the Trump administration, which is using this as a mechanism to kick people off of their health insurance. That's not what we should be doing in New Hampshire. And it's safe to say that Democrats wouldn't have voted for the bill last year if we just punted all authority to the Trump administration. What we've seen in response, the Trump administration, in my view, drastically changed our work requirement, our bipartisan work requirement, including with respect to how we treat people with disabilities, including how we deal with so-called opportunity to cure, including a number of provisions in terms of getting people into work. And as a consequence, a legislative committee in a bipartisan way objected to those rules that conform to the Trump administration. And then after that, the Sununu administration stood by the Trump administration.
Okay, so hang on. There's a lot to clarify here. So you're going back to like November, December. The Trump administration made some changes. Bipartisan opposition to this here in New Hampshire, from what I
correct.
Understand.
The legislative committee in charge of reviewing those rules were a consequence of the Trump administration changes, objected to it. Governor Sununu stood by the Trump administration. Fortunately, the Sununu administration came around, did an 84-page response that nuanced the rules in a way that was consistent with our statute. But at the end of the day, this is a question about standing up for New Hampshire and protecting New Hampshire's health care. That's what Senator Rosenwald's bill does.
Okay, that's what I want to talk about. Sort of setting aside all that sort of confusion about the Trump administration and so forth, what is the Democratic majority in the legislature trying to do now with this work requirement?
Well, number one, we want to make sure that all folks that are subject to the work requirement have an opportunity to get job training and barrier reduction assistance so they can get into the workplace. That has been historically opposed by Governor Sununu and our Republican colleagues. In fact, they've opposed, expanded that beyond the TANF population in the past. Hopefully they'll come around on that because that's the stated purpose by Governor Sununu and others about getting people into the workplace. So that's number one. Number two is making sure that we protect the health care of Granite Staters. We've seen in Arkansas 18,000 people getting kicked off with the Trump administration driving it down there. We want to protect New Hampshire's bipartisan work requirement. So there is a provision that says that if 500 or more people are kicked off of health insurance or projected to be kicked off of health insurance in Senator Rosenwald's bill, that we're out, because that's not the goal. And that hasn't been the stated goal by Senator Bradley and others, to kick people off of health insurance. So we want to make sure this actually works for New Hampshire and in the spirit of what we intended to do, not just be complicit with what the Trump administration wants to do, which is basically set up people to fail and kick people off of health insurance. We want to protect Granite Staters' health insurance, reduce uncompensated care in the system, which is a hidden tax on everybody. We need to protect the health care of Granite Staters.
Okay, and Trump administration says that's not their goal, just to put that out there, to kick people off.
But they say a lot of things that are inaccurate.
Well, but Senator Bradley, I want to go to you too. So my quick read of Senator Rosenwald's bill is that it eases up on some of the requirements. It has that sort of stop valve mechanism that Senator Feltus talks about, so people don't get kicked off as they did in Arkansas. What do you think about that approach, Senator Bradley?
Well, first of all, let me just say I think my colleague, Senator Feltus, is dead wrong about the Trump administration. In fact, the Trump administration allows New Hampshire recipients to self-attest their hours on working. I mean, that's a huge protection that wasn't in our bill to begin with that the Trump administration allows. So I think Dan is wrong on that. And in terms of Arkansas, I think there has been a failure there because there was only one way to ascertain your hours, and it was online. I think we've learned from that, and so we're going to allow people to do it in person, by phone, by fax, by email, by coming into an office. So I think we've learned from that. There, obviously, we want to incentivize work, as Governor Sununu indicated. But at the same time, we don't want to enable those who want to avoid work. And that's where what I think Senator Feltus and Senator Rosenwald, with this bill that Senator Rosenwald sponsored, are trying to do. I mean, they've got the requirement of work. I mean, it is a shell of itself. It's a work requirement in name only. They go from 25 hours a week to 20. They exempt anybody over 50. if you have a child 16 and under, you're exempt. So, I mean, the work requirement totally has changed. What we agreed to, and I guess this is the point that has gotten me a little bit exercised about this. Senator Feltz and Senator Rosenwald were two of six people, myself, Senator Gray, Senator Morse, and Commissioner Myers, representing the governor, that negotiated every detail, painstakingly negotiated every detail just over a year ago. And that was what was reflected in my bill, Senate Bill 313, which everybody supported. And so now, just on the slimmest possibility that New Hampshire could be like Arkansas, we have a new bill before the work requirements even taken effect in New Hampshire to basically gut it. And, you know, it's interesting how people view things. I'm looking at a letter that I got from Speaker Shurtleff and Senator Woodburn a year ago. And one of the things that they said, and this is an important point, it is now more important than ever that a bipartisan coalition of legislators join together to keep this program going. We needed bipartisan cooperation in 2018 when Republicans were in the majority. And in order to reauthorize it, and I know that won't happen for a few years, we're going to need bipartisan cooperation then. And by just introducing this legislation and fighting as hard for it as Senator Feltz is fighting for it, that bipartisan cooperation is definitely at risk.
Well, Senator Bradley, I got to jump in there.
To comply with.
And we will definitely talk about the details and just this sort of feeling that you seem to be expressing that there's been a breakdown of bipartisan trust on this issue. So coming up, Senator Feltz, I'll give you a chance to jump in. Jason, I'm going to go back to you as well. And we'll start taking your calls and emails. So join us. Exchange at nhpr.org is the email address. Exchange at nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a six-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, New Hampshire's new Medicaid work requirement, what it involves, whether it should change. Send us an email with your basic questions or your thoughts, comments, personal experiences. Our email is exchange at nhpr.org. Once again, exchange at nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Jason Moon, NHPR's health reporter. He's been covering this debate at the State House. Also with us, Dan Feltus, Democratic state senator from Concord. And on the phone, Jeb Bradley, Republican state senator from Wolfboro, who serves on the Health and Human Services Committee. And all of you, before we go back to our listeners, Senator Feltus, I did want to give you the opportunity to respond to this general feeling that I have heard from other Republicans, not just Senator Bradley, that, look, we worked on this thing. It was bipartisan. Everybody had to give a little. Why are you guys blowing it up?
So thank you, Laura. I appreciate it. Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm grateful for Senator Bradley and all his work over the years on Medicaid expansion. The reality is we wouldn't be where we are today without Senator Bradley's leadership. Though the notion that we are somehow breaking some bipartisan agreement is just a talking point. Let's get to the facts here. The Trump administration, since the legislation last year, issued a waiver, which I respectfully disagree with. The Sununu administration drastically changed our program, including in how it views people with disabilities, including how it views people an opportunity to cure, including how people can get into the workforce. And that's an intervening fact that we need to respond to here in the state of New Hampshire. And second...
So is that what the bills are about in the legislature? Is that...
I'd like to focus on that
because it's interesting. It keeps the work requirement, but it seems to sort of ease up a little bit on it. And I think that's interesting to talk about.
It does and it doesn't. I think the opportunity to cure feature makes it clear about what we meant by the opportunity to cure and the redrafting of the opportunity to cure.
And the opportunity to cure, that's a whole complicated way that the federal government says we need to measure how long people have to report and whether you can carry over from month to month. And I'd rather just find out what Senator Rosenwald is trying to do and
sure.
And
talk well, that's about what that. That's what we're. So the opportunity to cure is basically what in Senator Rosenwald's bill makes it clear that you have an opportunity to learn from any mistake you may have made and then cure it moving forward, not necessarily carrying forward deficient hours or doing a strange calculation of the carry forward of deficient hours. On top of that, the Trump administration says that if you work extra hours, you can't carry those forward. Senator Rosenwald's bill says that's a disincentive to work. And in fact, you should carry forward additional hours that you work above and beyond. Senator Rosenwald's bill also goes down from 100 hours a month as a requirement to 80 hours a month, which is what every other state does. It also exempts people age 50 and older. And key thing is it puts in a trigger because no one intended that people in mass numbers get kicked off of health insurance. And what we've seen in Arkansas and others is another intervening factor that happened over the last few months is that thousands of people are getting kicked off of their health insurance. You know what? In New Hampshire, that was never our intent. So Senator Rosenwald's bill, I think, is squarely within building off of and making it stronger our bipartisan deal. And I get that some people want to just stick with the verbatim language. Every year, Laura, legislation changes different things. Medicaid expansion has changed every session. It's now back to an MCO model, which is what Governor Hassan wanted. The Republicans didn't.
Yeah.
And now we're going to...
So let me jump in, Senator Feltes, please, if I could, because this 100 hours a month, Senator Bradley, we heard earlier from Maddie at Governing Magazine that New Hampshire's 100 hours a month is the toughest in the nation among these states that have looked at work requirements. So is there some wiggle room there, Senator Bradley, to pull back on the hours?
Well, again, this was part of the agreement that Senator Feltes, myself, Senator Rosenwald, and the three others made last year. And so I think you can understand why, with all the compromise that we put on, in fact, my side only wanted block grant Medicaid programs, not what we ended up with 4 years ago. So, we compromised 100 hours. Yes, it's a little stronger than most states, but I think fully justified by the fact that we're trying to incentivize people to work. And I just have to push back on Senator Feltes again, just constantly blaming the Trump administration. Commissioner Myers, remember, appointed by a Democratic governor, appointed by Governor Hassan, has said that what the Trump administration and CMS, Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, did was to make it easier to comply with. And that self-attesting provision I talked about before is definitely in favor of the recipient. And so here we are. I get that we should pay attention to Arkansas. I get that. But before the work requirements even in effect in New Hampshire, we're blowing it up. And if there are problems with a work requirement, just as there would be with any legislation, I think we need to look at it before, and see how to solve it after the problems manifest themselves, not just gutting, what Senator Feltes and myself agreed to last year.
Senator Brad, let me jump in for a second and go to our listeners, and then I have another question for you, Jason Moon. Fred in Canterbury says, I have often heard that Medicaid recipients typically are already working low-paid jobs without health insurance. Who are we incentivizing to go to work? So who is this population? You touched on this earlier, Jason, but who are we really talking about here in New Hampshire?
Well, it's folks who make a level of income that's just above the poverty level, up to 138%, as our first guest was pointing out.
The Medicaid expansion population,
right?
Yeah.
And so that can be a number of different demographics. It can be Young people working service industry jobs. It can be older folks who maybe are empty nesters and maybe work a little on the side, who don't yet qualify for or don't qualify for traditional Medicaid or Medicare yet. So it is kind of an interesting cross section of society, and you can find examples of different different kinds of folks who maybe this would incentivize them to get a job, or maybe
sounds like some of them are working already, so they wouldn't be affected. They're already fulfilling that work requirement.
That certainly will be true in some cases, certainly. But again, it goes back to your sort of philosophical position on this. Should the state be ensuring that you are contributing to society, so to speak, if you're going to be receiving the generosity of this government health care program?
Well, and here's another email from Dennis in Barrington. Fred, thank you for that one. Dennis says, Medicaid work requirements make the assumption that someone is poor because they are lazy. Is government actually going to help facilitate those seeking work by assisting people with transportation, education, childcare, and all the many legitimate reasons that people have difficulty finding employment? I'd love to ask both of our state senators about this because, Senator Feltus, this comes up in other states. Some people say work requirement, fine, but if someone can't get childcare or transportation, how do they go to work?
And that's exactly one of the things I mentioned earlier, Laura. Our Republican colleagues and Governor Sununu to date have not supported helping people get to work, transportation, childcare, et cetera, outside of the TANF-eligible population.
TANF means welfare in New Hampshire.
Yeah. So that's a big chunk of the people that may be subject to the work requirement that are not going to get assistance. And that's what Senator Rosenwald's bill does, another key feature of it. And I want to thank her for all her leadership and healthcare expertise. And that's really key here. And you know what? If we're going to set this up, we can't set people up to fail. And this is about people's health insurance and protecting it and fighting back in Senator Rosenwald's bill to the efforts by the Trump administration. We have other legislation, too, to protect people's pre-existing conditions and essential health benefits because of the Trump administration's efforts on health care to erode. And
Wait, can I just get some clarification from
yeah.
you then? So you're saying under the previous work requirement that we passed last time, there were no monies available for transportation, child care, et cetera, to help people work, and Senator Rosenwald's bill does that? Is that what you're saying, Senator Feltus?
Senator Rosenwald's bill opens up the possibility to support beyond the TANF-eligible population. So the TANF-eligible population is just a small segment of those subject to the work and community engagement requirement. And so I'm hoping our Republican colleagues will go along with that concept of helping everyone who's subject to the work and community engagement requirement get to work. That's what this should be all about.
Okay. Let me ask Senator Bradley how he feels about that aspect of it. Because this does come up a lot, Senator Bradley, that maybe somebody wants to work, but they've got an 8-year-old that they can't leave home alone, or they don't have a car or whatever. So I just wonder what you think about that.
We built provision into the bill for a good cause exemption for a parent with a child older than 6 years old, that if they could show good cause about child care or lack of child care, that they would be exempted for a period of time from the work requirement. I think that's, we recognized that there are certain situations that are difficult for people. That's why we had 12 ways of complying with it that Jason has already outlined. So I think the work requirement is, easy to comply with. And we certainly, at least in my opinion, should not be making it a work requirement in name only before we see how it plays out. And I think, just so that your listeners know, the estimate is maybe somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000 of the 50,000 recipients would be required to show work requirement. We don't have a solid number yet. So it's a subset of, the overall population. And to get back to the funding that you asked about, I mean, Senator Feltz's bill opens the Medicaid funding to New Hampshire general funds and eviscerates the taxpayer protection that we built into this bill starting in the first version in 2014, which Governor Hassan was fine with. I mean, it just takes it away and allows general funds to be used to pay for the program. So I think, you know, this is a dramatic change from the bipartisan agreement that we came to last year. And I think, you know, I'm just quoting from something Senator Feltz said in the Concord Monitor, you know, at the end of the session last year. He said, it's not the bill I would have drafted on my own, but it's a reasonable reauthorization to help 50,000 folks keep their health insurance.
Well, would
and it's the most effective way to combat the opioid. So before we even have problems, we're throwing out the compromise with this bill.
Well, and
I
Senator
just think
that's
problematic for the future and reauthorizing it.
I just want to ask you about those. No, that's okay. It's hard on the phone sometimes. I get it. I just did want to ask you, though, about those general funds. So concerned that this bill dedicates general funds to, you know, Medicaid, which has its own, specific stream of funding. Would those general funds help somebody get child care and then they could go to work, or help them, you know, find transportation so they could go to work? I mean, is there an argument in favor of using those general funds?
Well, and if there is an argument in favor of doing that, that should come in through the budget, and it should be debated with all the other priorities that we have in New Hampshire. That a lot of those priorities are very bipartisan. Fixing DCYF, more resources for mental health and substance abuse. I mean, something that Senator Feltz and I have partnered up on to make improvements in New Hampshire. And so, you know, I think that folks like me would listen to an argument if that is a priority and we have resources available. But, you know, to do it outside the budget process and use general funds where Medicaid expansion has always been designed to use federal funds for 90%, and we did solve the, you know, 10% state required funding, to blow that up and say, you know, if the feds change the rules, it's now a general fund obligation for taxpayers in New Hampshire to pay for a federal program. I mean, I find that actually, Laura, even more problematic than what Senator Feltz is trying to do with the work requirement.
Because it's a specific,
I mean, we built
specific stream
protection
of
into this
funding.
It would be gone if that bill passes.
Jason, I want to bring you back in for a quick sec.
Yeah, so just on this notion of whether the state would be helping people to find work rather than just requiring, there is a limited program included in the program as it exists now, which is called the Granite Workforce Pilot Work Program. If you're 19 to 64 with a child under 18, you qualify, or if you're a childless adult between 19 and 24, you qualify. And there are certain reimbursement funds available to you for tuition assistance, mileage reimbursements for getting to work.
So that's in there already?
That's in the program as it exists today, yes. Money for employer subsidies, so trying to encourage employers to hire people under the work requirement. They could get some of the wages subsidized through the program. This program will only last through 2019, however, so it's a pilot program. It could be reauthorized, but I just wanted for listeners to know there is a limited program built in right now to help a certain chunk of people who will be subject to the requirement to get work, to overcome some barriers.
Senator Feltz, talking about the people who might be affected by this, DHHS Commissioner Jeffrey Myers has said there may be between 15 and 20,000 individuals who, as he put it, may not be working sufficient hours presently, although Commissioner Myers stressing the final number is likely to be lowered when certain conditions are considered. So even if it's, you know, 8,000 people or 10,000 people, what's the argument against requiring them to do something in exchange for that health coverage paid by the federal and state government?
Well, Senator Rosenwald and I are not making that argument. I think the reality is only what Jason mentioned is only about 10 or 15% of those 15 to 20,000 people are going to be in the bucket of potentially eligible for barrier reduction to get in the workforce. That's not
and
fair.
Barrier reduction.
Child care, transportation, job training, skills training, those sorts of things to get people into jobs. And, you know, the reality is if we value work, we should value the proposition of putting people, giving them the skills to get into those jobs. So that's why general funds should be used for that. Barrier reduction assistance, it's something to date that Governor Sununu and our Republican colleagues have opposed, is those type of funding for those positions to help people get into those jobs. Second, The general fund is being used for Medicaid expansion. It's supporting the staff on the ground that is processing Medicaid expansion. It's not
at HHS.
At HHS, right. So it's not technically going through the Medicaid expansion trust, but general funds are used to support the staff on the ground that are implementing the Medicaid expansion program. So it's a little bit of a misnomer to say that general funds aren't being used at all. And then finally, Laura, I just want to say, at the end of the day, this is about standing up for the health care of Granite Staters. You're talking about 15 to 20,000 people whose security, health care security, and their health insurance, critical situations, diabetes, heart, pre-existing conditions, all sorts of things, standing up for their health care to make sure that they have an opportunity to keep their health care. That's what Senator Rosenwald's bill is all about, and that's why we have other bills also battling back against the Trump administration's effort to pull the rug out from the health care of Granite Staters. And so we need to stand up for New Hampshire's health care system. That's what this bill does.
Here's another email. This person says, I've been a public defender in Nashua for over a decade. The difference is noticeable in the last few years since expanded Medicaid. People who haven't had health care for years can now get help, medical, mental health, prescriptions, substance abuse. But this person says it still takes a while before they are in a healthy enough place to work for 100 hours a month. I think a lower number is needed and at least 6 months of health care before they are expected to meet the work requirement. What do you think about that, Senator Bradley? This person seems to be not against a work requirement, but easing back a little bit. I just wonder what you think, Senator Bradley.
Yeah, so I think we've built in those kind of protections that if you're unable to work for any number of reasons, whether it's a medical condition, substance abuse, anything like that, you're automatically exempted. And I think, you know, I would advise your listeners to go, you know, look in the 2018 session under Senate Bill 313 and read the first four or five pages of the bill and see how we structured it. There are any number of exemptions that make it easy to qualify. And I would, you know, the one thing I would agree with Senator Feltz on is that our legislation last year, which he touted as bipartisan success and was one of the key negotiators of, we have stood up for the health care of 50,000 plus people in New Hampshire. There is no question about that. But by doing what he's doing now, before the ink is even dry on, you know, that legislation and it's fully implemented, by, you know, changing the terms of it, Medicaid expansion has to be reauthorized in 5 years. Well, a little less than that now. And so the bipartisan cooperation that was necessary to get three pieces of legislation through in 2014, 16, and again in 18 could disappear. And so the very people that Senator Feltz claims he's trying to help are going to be the ones that are hurt if there's not bipartisan cooperation to make sure that we've stood up and done exactly what people like myself have done and protected, you know, the health care of those 50,000 people. I think we've done it. We've done it extremely successfully. We've done it with bipartisan cooperation. And that's how you get things done. Not everybody gets everything they want. It's sometimes a little bit uneasy to get to yes, okay, but we got to yes. It was hard, and now I'm afraid that getting to yes in the future, when we need to protect the health care of those 50,000 people, because of what Senator Feltz and Senator Rosenwald are trying to do now, is really going to be threatened well, dramatically, and that's a problem.
And Senator Feltz, as you know, I mean, this Medicaid expansion program here in New Hampshire was a long process. Lots of special sessions. People met, you know, even when the legislature wasn't in session. Lots of meetings. We did endless amounts of shows on this, and it was sort of an example of bipartisan compromise. And I just wonder how you feel about this idea that can we stick with this for now? Don't blow it up right now. This was, you know, years and years and years in the making.
Well, it's not being blown up. And I would encourage Senator Bradley to take his own advice and work with Senator Rosenwald on improving the bill, on improving our system, standing up to the Trump administration's recent efforts to drastically change it, and reacting to the facts on the ground that we're seeing play out in other states. Senator Bradley and Governor Sununu ought to work together, not just say we're not going to do anything on this issue at all. We ought to react to what's going on elsewhere where people are getting kicked off of their health insurance, and we ought to react to what the Trump administration is doing to New Hampshire. This is about standing up for New Hampshire. All of this stuff happened recently, and we have recent data and recent information. So Governor Sununu should not just be complicit with the Trump administration. He should come to the table and actually work with us.
All right. And Jason Moon, last word there. What do you think is going to happen next on this?
Well, the big thing to watch is when people actually have to start reporting their hours. So the program officially turns on March 1st, but because of an on-ramp period, June is the first month that people will have to start reporting their hours. So looking for this summer to see if people start losing their coverage.
All right. All of you, thank you very much for being with us. Senator Bradley, Senator Feltes, Jason Moon, thank you for your time. We'll be following up on this again.
Thanks so much, Laura.
Coming up, something a little special here in the Exchange. We're going to check back in with four brand new state lawmakers, get their impressions after 2 months at the State House. So stay with us for that. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.